Welcome to the first ever episode of Personas. Personas is a podcast series that features members of the User Experience Research Toronto community. We will speak with a different user researcher each month to hear about their successes and challenges and to introduce you all to some of the extremely talented individuals that make up our wonderful community. I hope you find this podcast insightful and interesting. If you ever want to have a question asked, please feel free to reach out to me on the User Experience Research Toronto Slack group. My username is Melanie. Thank you so much for joining us, Dennis. I'd like to start this convo by having you introduce yourself. Please let us know where you spend the majority of your weekdays, i.e. where you work, and which patio you wish you were sitting on in the city right now.
So hi everyone, my name is Dennis, and I lead the user research initiatives for Ecobee, which is a Canadian smart home automation company that builds hardware and software products. In terms of a patio that I wish that I was sitting at right now, because our offices are at Queens Quay, New York, which is a beautiful place to be, I would be sitting at Boxcar Social, which is near our offices.
Nice. Okay, Dennis, so since this is a podcast about community and one of the goals is to try and introduce more of the UXRTO community to each other, those that are listening or people who are interested, I would like to know, how did you get into user research? Because it seems like it's not a very traditional practice, right? And it's always interesting to hear how people came to find this career, and then also maybe more about your background. So how did your background influence you getting into UXR?
Awesome. Yeah, that's a really interesting question because, funny enough, I didn't find user research found me. Before becoming a researcher, I had actually worked at a small startup where I was responsible for building and managing an online community website for individuals in Toronto and Waterloo's tech community. And so because this company was really small, I was that individual that essentially had to do everything. Mm-hmm. I wore multiple hats. So from a product perspective, I was responsible for defining the why, the when, and the what of this product.
Yeah.
Then I had to take it from a development standpoint and actually code the website, do the visual design, the graphics, and the copy. And following that, I then had to switch gears and focus on marketing. So publishing content. Everything. I had to do everything.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was a great opportunity because I was able to play around in different disciplines. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I always felt was because I didn't have proper direction on what I actually had to do, the only way that I was able to understand who am I building this product for was to actually involve users mm-hmm. into this concept and design phase. And so after being there for 6 years, I was there for 6 years, and it was funny because I just was doing everything. I actually didn't even know what to call myself.
Yeah.
Maybe unicorn?
Yeah, it's a common one now.
Yeah, and so after 6 years, a recruiter from Loyalty One had reached out to me, saying that the company was going through a recent agile transformation and that they were trying to bring UX in-house.
Mm.
And at that point, that wasn't really a concept I understood. I was like, what is UX and what are the different things you would do in UX? And they didn't even know what this was. So they invited me to meet with the chief technology officer and without actually having a job description that I would be talking about. So I came there and so they told me that they were looking to build up from scratch a team of UX resources, but they weren't really sure what to be hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so because this was also something that I was unclear of, I ended up asking a lot of questions and trying to understand, like, what was it that you were trying to solve based on having these resources? What is the need for having UX resources? And from that, what was interesting is that they recognized themselves that, you know what, the fact that you're so inquisitive this way likely means that you could fit into a role that we're considering, which is UX research.
Yeah.
And that essentially was what established my career.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So what if you were to talk about, like, your formal background. Like, did you go to university or college, or how did you even get into the tech scene at first?
So I graduated from the University of Manitoba with a degree in marketing.
Okay.
And so with this degree, I find that marketing is so broad,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up finding myself not really sure what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And so on the side, I was always just coding websites
okay.
and doing certain things that were a little bit more creative.
Yeah.
And so I think that was partly one of the reasons why I had joined this smaller startup
mm-hmm.
was that I had the opportunity to kind of spread my wings and just kind of figure out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, I was doing freelance work at the same time. So I had a portfolio of websites that I could show them. And nice. It was essentially that that brought me into that role.
Yeah.
While I was at that startup, I also ended up thinking of going back to school. So I went and did a master's in inclusive design at OCAD University.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Does that still exist today?
It still exists. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I believe it's the fourth year now that it's been in establishment. And I decided to take this because part of what I was trying to understand is when we're designing these products for our users, mm-hmm. are we in fact designing the products for all types of users? And
yeah.
so it's not just around the accessibility of the products that we're designing, but it's trying to understand the full range of human diversity. And that was
yeah.
what really interested me in doing it.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's really cool. Okay, great. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, so you mentioned that you had, at your first job that you were at for 6 years, was it?
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of experience wearing many different hats and doing different things, and then you kind of built yourself into this UXR role. I'm wondering, like, something that we often have, I don't know if I want to say often, but something as researchers sometimes we come into, like, a discrepancy with is trying to get stakeholder involvement. I'm really curious to know about what your experience was as a researcher, and then maybe if you could speak about your experience with getting stakeholder researcher in your other roles. Was there one where it was more convincing to the stakeholders than the other, and do you ever find that it's difficult to do that as a researcher?
Right. So at Loyalty One, what was really interesting is when I was hired as the first UX resource, and
mm-hmm.
funny enough, it was a UX researcher.
Nice.
And they've never had a UX researcher before. I don't even think at that time they even knew what a UX researcher should do. And so that goes across the entire organization from
yeah.
the different departments and from the people who essentially we consider our stakeholders. And that was a lot of pressure for me because here's this person that comes into an organization that needs to establish a role that never existed before and that
yeah.
many people don't even know about.
Yeah. I find that's a pretty common thing where, like, a lot of people have never worked with a researcher at all, right? So I can see that being, you know, something that you experienced in your experience.
Yeah, and so because I was the only UX resource there, there wasn't even a design team to work with.
Well,
and I feel that kind of worked to my advantage
yeah.
because oftentimes you would hear from other researchers that we typically are involved at the end of a design process where we're just evaluating a
mm-hmm.
concept or we're trying to understand how users are already interacting with an existing product. Because there wasn't any designers in the company from when I joined, a lot of what I had to do was to meet with the different department stakeholders or even within the product teams themselves, the product managers and the developers, to understand what challenges and uncertainties they had with the products that they were building.
Mm-hmm.
And then using that as a way to inform what needed to be changed on our product. So when the designers came on board, there was something to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, when having to go through this process, there was stakeholder buy-in, at least in Loyalty One, for when I was building almost like a research roadmap of the type of products I needed to design for the user.
Yeah.
And they were on board with that because this just wasn't a process that was done
before.
Oh,
yeah.
It was typically just UX design was visual design to them.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
it was just, we just think we should design something a certain way without
mm-hmm.
really understanding why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And so it was understanding that we need to design with the users in mind and then understanding what the different pain points are and the jobs to be done.
Yeah, for sure. And so what are some clever ways that you've used to get stakeholder involvement? So you mentioned building out this roadmap and kind of like maybe working alongside with them to see what you should prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else? Like, have you ever had an experience where there was like a really difficult project where like no one really was on board with what you were trying to do? And how did you try and overcome that?
So I'll answer your first question in
yeah.
terms of just some of the clever things that we've done to engage
mm-hmm.
stakeholders, and I'll touch on the next question. But
sure.
at EQB, when I joined, one of the things that I did from learning the experiences from working at Loyalty One was establish a customer insights type of program. And essentially, I feel that product companies always say that we listen to our users, but they don't always listen to their
I
users.
Know.
They think that they do.
Yeah, yeah. Or they, like... I don't know, read their tweets or something.
Yeah,
listening.
Exactly. So then it was trying to create a program where there was more of a methodology in how we talk to our users, mm-hmm. or how we engage our customers into these types of conversations. And so the program was essentially two-parted, where there would be weekly user interviews with 5 to 10 customers a week.
Oh, wow.
And it was with these customers who had recently purchased our smart thermostat or our smart mm-hmm. light switch. And then, so every week we would try to understand the reasons for buying our products, mm-hmm. essentially uncovering the jobs to be done. But because we were scheduling them in, we've also created a schedule for product managers and stakeholders to listen in.
Okay.
And on these conversations.
Yeah.
And so it was just an easier way for them to actually hear
yeah,
the right type
definitely.
Of yeah, like information that's mm-hmm. coming from a user. And then at the end of every week, it's up to the stakeholder as well as the researcher to then present back to the group mm-hmm. just to see what were their overall learnings and what do they hope to
yeah.
accomplish and learn from this.
That's awesome.
The other thing that we've done, and this is more so for our evaluator research,
mm-hmm.
is for every type of user testing that we do, we're not only going to do it, but we could only do it if there's stakeholders involved. So
okay.
in this way, we
yeah.
have to have at least 2 stakeholders observing and taking notes.
Okay.
Because then that context building and understanding of what the users are going through.
Mm-hmm. And empathy, too.
And empathy, exactly.
Yeah.
And being able to observe those moments of truth is really what's most important. And so as opposed to us just like creating a formal report and engaging them in a presentation,
mm-hmm.
they're there, they're
okay.
present.
Yeah.
And so for all our projects, something that we are very specific with is that research is a collaborative approach and that we need to work together in order to ensure that we're capturing the right insights, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are understanding how these insights are going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
As researchers, I find that we're not in the position to make recommendations. We just help come to conclusions.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point, because I know in previous roles that I've had, I've always tried to be that like problem solver and be the person to come to a solution, but I've learned over time that that's not our job, and I think a lot of people in organizations might think that that is what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to ask, so is this research that you do at Ecobee, is this so you said it's an ongoing thing, so it's a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do the users come into Ecobee, or are you doing this online? And if you're doing it online, how do you make it so that the user isn't overwhelmed by having many people talk with them? Or is it just one person conversing and then other people are just kind of like on the side and not seen to the user?
Yes, it's the latter. So oftentimes it would be done remotely. So
mm-hmm.
typically with these weekly user interviews, it's just done by telephone calls, which
okay.
we would then just have on speakerphone.
Yeah.
And
perfect.
So it would just be led by one researcher, or mm-hmm. even the product manager or the stakeholder could
yeah.
actually conduct the user interview. And then the other individuals are there just capturing and observing, taking notes.
Okay.
For our evaluator research, because our products are typically used within the US,
mm-hmm.
We use a product called Lookback.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah,
it's like a really great like
yeah.
remote user testing software.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about it is that as a moderator, then the participant is only dealing with you. They see you and you see the participant,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to observe what they're doing. But you could also invite observers into the same session, so they would have their own individual view of
yeah.
what's happening from their computers, and
yeah.
they could take notes.
And will mm-hmm. the with Lookback, does the participant also see that it's more than one person
no.
joining? Oh, okay,
yeah.
that's good. Very
yeah.
incognito, yeah.
So it's yeah, exactly.
Nice.
And then so you could invite as many observers to the session, and then so there's like an area in which observers could take notes, they could send comments back and forth to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done a number of sessions where I moderated, and for those that are observing from their own computers, I would often see a question posed to me to be, can you ask this person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Have you ever had that experience where you are in a session and you have people also my experience with Lookback, I haven't actually used it, but I've done the demo before, and if people are asking you questions, Does that become, like, distracting, though? Because I know sometimes I've been in a situation where I've been moderating a usability session or a user interview, and then people are on Skype, or not Skype, sorry, on Slack, and they're like, oh, can you ask this question? Can you ask that question? Like, is that kind of the same idea with look back, or is it, like, is it any easier? Because I find that's, like, really distracting.
I wouldn't say that it's any easier or harder. I do think that it is a certain type of skill that, as a moderator, you just have to kind of learn where you're framing a question that you want to ask the participant, you're listening to their responses, but at the same time, you see, like, five other questions being asked.
Yeah.
And then, because oftentimes the questions that the observers want to ask are not phrased in a way that should be asked, it's then having to think about how do you restructure it. So oftentimes I'll just pick and choose where it does make sense to ask it, and then if I don't feel it does, then after the session I'll just go back to the observers and say, I didn't ask this question because...
Great. So, currently you're a UX lead at Ecobee, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So, where do you plan on going with your career after you've climbed as high as traditional research roles go? And, like, I know that you could be like, I don't know if it works in your organization, but I've seen other titles like senior UX research lead, and then director of UX research, and then VP, and then I don't know if there's like a C-level person or like an executive of research, but yeah, so you, like, in terms of research, I would say, like, personally, you're pretty high up there. Where do you plan on going after being a research lead?
Okay, I'll just touch on how I kind of transitioned through the different roles within research.
Yeah, for sure.
And so what I found is when I initially joined Loyalty One, it was first as a team of one. And from that, like, traditionally...
You were the loyal one.
I was the loyal one at Loyalty One. And so what ended up happening, and this is what I consider a traditional research role, is I was actively involved in doing the generative and evaluative research. So I worked closely with the UX design team once it came on board. And so once I felt that I mastered that, I ended up dealing more with the product managers. And with that being said, it was creating more of a capacity for research, which is then when I became a manager of UX research, hiring resources to help support the type of insights that were required for each team. From that, I then ended up shifting over to Ecobee, where I joined as a lead to help create a research discipline for the product management department. So it was, as I mentioned before, looking at what the product managers were going to be building and then creating a research roadmap alongside their product roadmap. And then understanding whether or not there needed to be more resources to help support some of those initiatives. Where I'm at now is more of a role focused on high-level strategy and research operations, where I'm really trying to influence how the organization should think about its users and align user research with the overall business strategy. So when I think about this, oftentimes there's still a disconnect about when should the user be involved with the overall customer journey. But I do find that as a user researcher, we should actually own the customer journey and look at every touch point, look at all the different moments of truth, and understand that the experience that a user takes, whether it's from an interface or whether it's from a physical device, happens the moment that you realize that they need the product.
I was just going to ask you, when does the user journey start?
So it's, if we're talking about the jobs to be done, it's that they're triggered that they need a solution. And so we need to identify the ways in which we could elevate and bubble up some of these things so that when they consider your product or solution, it's right there in front of them that we've identified their needs. So we've created, like, the marketing messaging. We've created the overall way in which we fit their requirements. And so if I think about where I want to be, it's more of, like, a head of customer insights where I would be marrying like big data and small data together, working across disciplinary with the different teams to say that you have these inputs coming from market research, you have these inputs coming from data analytics, etc. Mm-hmm. And then we have our qualitative insights coming from the product side. And like, how do we put that all together so that we just have like one nugget
of insight? Do you have any idea how to put that together to make that nugget?
I do think that a lot of it is just building just more credibility and having more influence of how the research that we're doing is actually creating really great products, mm-hmm. and that we're delivering really great experiences. Yeah. And so like that, it's not like tied to design and it's not tied to product, but it's just tied to just business requirements and business needs and consumer expectations.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so you mentioned that you really like to be involved in building this roadmap alongside PMs and other stakeholders. I'm wondering what is one thing that you think is clear to you as your experience as a UX researcher, but you don't think is clear to other people. And that could be other people that you're working with, like trying to build this roadmap or just trying to work with at Ecobee. But then maybe also just outside of work and, you know, people, for me, like, I know when I tell them, like, you know, I used to study psychology, they're like, oh, are you analyzing me? And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. That's not what type of researcher I am. Yeah. So if you could touch on, like, what your experience has been as a researcher in your work setting, but then also, like, outside of work, what people think you do.
Okay. So professionally, I feel like you'll agree that oftentimes people don't actually realize how difficult our work really is, mm-hmm. in terms of everything that we need to do in order to actually conduct a study and to synthesize.
Yeah, so, like all the planning and organizing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think what I've always found is that the conversation about requiring more resources is often met with resistance because they don't realize that oftentimes, we're the only person responsible for finding and recruiting participants, that we're the only ones creating these research protocols, that we're the only ones setting up the research environments, executing mm-hmm. the research, synthesizing the research, and then presenting the findings.
Yeah.
And so I often feel that because they only look at user researchers as just, again, like the endpoint to something that's already done, you just feel like we just randomly find people and just ask them how they like the product or not.
It only takes like 1 hour.
It only takes 1 hour and there's no planning and, you know, we just show something to someone and they give us their thoughts.
Yeah. And they always answer the way that we want them to.
Exactly. Yeah. And then so the challenge of this is because it isn't clear the extent of our, like that we actually have to do all this planning and all this logistics, it's a common misconception that you don't need more than one researcher. Mm-hmm. And so I know that when I joined Ecobee, this was initially the case. And a lot of the different staff members in the company came from organizations where there was just one researcher. And it did seem to work fine. Yeah, exactly. But I also find that it really depends on the environment. So you can't say that what works for one company will work for another. Mm-hmm. And so,
do you also think that I went to a talk once where they talked about the maturity of your company will also kind of coincide with how they think about research. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that a company that's more mature will take research more seriously in your experience?
The only experience that I had is with Loyalty One, which I consider a mature company. So Loyalty One is the company behind the Air Miles program. Mm-hmm. And so they were established for at least 25 years now. And they've had the traditional model of having market research.
Right, yeah.
And so I found that it was a challenge with presenting user research because they felt that we were essentially doing the same type of thing.
Yeah, common
and
problem.
So, yeah, and so in a smaller environment and at this point, Ecobee is just over 300 employees.
Wow.
There's a lot more, interest in wanting to experiment and try new things because we're just in that growth phase.
Yeah.
So I do find it's a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. What I find that most people don't know, and I would even consider other user researchers, is that our approach to research is very different because we do work for both a software and hardware company.
Yeah.
And so when we think about our research, going back to what I said earlier, we have to look at the entire customer journey and ideate and understand, like, how are the users engaging not just with the physical product, but with our actual packaging, our marketing messaging, the installation process, where are they putting it in their room, in their homes? And once they have it set up, it's like, how are they actually interacting with it beyond just the interface? So we have voice, we have like the physical device, we have app. And so there's a lot of those other nuances, which I don't think that other researchers are aware of, because oftentimes the research that is typically done is purely software driven.
I was going to ask you too, like, do you have separate research teams for each of these different, like, facets of the device? Like, do you have a industrial design research team and then, like, an app research team, or do you guys work across all of the platforms?
Initially, it started off where we were looked at as more of a spot support type of service, where we supported all the teams, and whenever there was a need for research, then we would go and conduct a study or get some insights. But that quickly failed. It was really hard. And so this is where it then ended up going to the transition towards embedded researchers, where because our company creates very disparate types of products, we have like a light switch, we have like a thermostat, we have software. The amount of context that you need for each type of line of business is very difficult to have if you're constantly jumping. And so now what I'm looking to do is to continue building out the research team so that there's a dedicated researcher that's just focused on one area. So one researcher that's focused on understanding what are the user needs and what are the expectations and motivations when it comes to lighting. And this goes to like comfort and temperature, etc.
So that's a really good segue. I'm interested in knowing more about the structure at Ecobee, and so how is research organized at your company? So you mentioned that you're trying to build out this research team so they're embedded in like each product. How many people do you currently have, and what else have you seen that you think works and is like the best structure?
So I touched on it briefly, but when I had joined Ecobee, the perception was that I would be supporting all the different teams on my own. And so that was what I considered more of like the spot support. And it didn't work because of the fact that each of the different teams were working so quickly, but because they also had very different lines of business. And so the approach that I had to establish is that we needed to have dedicated researchers, so that a dedicated researcher would be on like our thermostat and one would be on light switch. Currently that means I have two. However, I'm looking to expand a team so that in the future there could potentially be five. And so this would just be just around like our new innovations, but also to be more involved from a research operations standpoint, someone that could be responsible for doing a lot of the logistics and facilitation. And so what I really find interesting about this model is that each of the embedded researchers are then devoted to understanding the user needs around their specific line of business. And their role is not to act as a consultant, but to act as a guide. So they guide the product teams in understanding what insights are needed throughout each of the different phases within the product development process. They guide the type of methodology that should be used, and then they guide the type of insights that would actually help inform the design changes. And it's from this perspective where I feel like there's been a lot of value to the different teams, because they know that they have this guide that is able to help them uncover a lot of the different pain points that they've, or sorry, they haven't really been able to understand that users had from before. When I worked at Air Miles, because Air Miles, when I worked at Loyalty One, which is the company behind Air Miles, the fact of the matter was that it was a single product, so Air Miles was just like a website and an app. It was easier to have this type of spot support type of structure, where because the company was more involved in creating and producing like features, there wasn't really a lot of context switching that were required.
Yep.
So it was easier to then just be involved across all teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I feel works best really does depend on the type of environment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
It worked at Air Miles / Royalty One.
Yeah.
Because then it was just one product, like solely focused on like navigation and features. And then at EQB, this embedded model works best because then it's almost like there's four different companies within the same company.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm wondering if you think that having researchers embedded in different products would kind of break the cohesiveness of like the entire experience. So, you know, you have someone working on apps and then someone working on the light switch, but the app controls the light switch, and then there's like the physical aspect of controlling the light switch too, and you kind of want those to be familiar. And you know, from the light switch to the thermostat, you kind of, I would assume we would want those to be a little bit similar too, so that if someone is a light switch user and then goes to a thermostat, it's not like they're learning a new device.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there could be some of like breaking that cohesiveness, or like how could you keep that together?
Right. So the one thing that isn't done at EQB is the researchers aren't broken out in terms of like app versus web.
Okay.
So like app is just a channel, how people are able to control their devices,
mm-hmm.
but the channel then controls all the devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that I've embedded researchers is more on the physical products that we're creating. And so what's really unique about, what's really unique about this model is that not only are the researchers able to like become subject matter experts in their specific domain, but when they are having to pair with other researchers, they're able to bring different perspectives together
mm-hmm.
when tackling similar type of projects or similar type of requirements. As an example, like you mentioned the app,
mm-hmm.
because oftentimes we're having to decide on new features that touch on both like our like light switch products or our thermostat products, this is an opportunity where then the researchers on those two teams would come together and tackle it together.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, and so we always try to ensure that there's just approach where, although as a guide or embedded researcher on
mm-hmm.
a team, you're ultimately working with other researchers because we're still trying to solve the bigger problem of how do we ensure that we're creating a connected home.
Right.
And a connected home is like how are all the devices connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so a common thing that I've had people ask on UXRTO is, and I've seen in the channel, is what are people learning, what techniques are people trying out, and, you know, because research, or UXR research, is not like other types of research, like in academia, where
mm-hmm.
I used the example today that when I was a psychology student, we had like APA format, and that's how we would present things, and that's how we would do all of our research and stuff, but we don't have that, yet, at least, in UX research. So I'm curious to hear about, what people are learning and their techniques and what you're
cool.
up to.
Okay, so in the past, our team of researchers had done workshops around, the jobs to be done framework,
mm-hmm.
empathy mapping, and experience mapping. But more recently, we did a lunch and learn on The Mom Test, which is a book by Rob Fitzpatrick.
Okay.
And essentially the book provides a set of principles that anyone who talks to potential or existing customers should consider.
Hmm.
And the reasoning behind this is that people will outwardly lie to your face when you try to sell them on an idea. And so, especially your mom, because she loves you.
Yeah.
So the principles are, how do you essentially conduct, say, like a user interview, or how do you talk to people about something that you're looking to develop,
mm-hmm.
but by asking it in a way that you eliminate any of that fluff?
Yeah.
That there's things to consider, and like, how do you know that you're actually getting like the insight?
Yeah.
And so this has been a really great way for how product managers, user researchers, designers have been able to see the value of these weekly user interviews because of the type of questions that we're asking our users.
Mm-hmm. Do you ask the same questions all the time, or do you switch that up?
It's switched up. So it's not that there's a list of questions that you would ask. It's more around the deframing of the questions.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I would consider anyone who needs to more effectively speak with their users to consider the book. It's a really fun and light read,
mm-hmm.
and it will honestly make you such a great interviewer.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Awesome. I'll definitely keep that in mind. Okay, so if you had any advice for people getting into the field, I've often been asked this myself, and I feel like for me, my path was like pretty traditional, I don't want to say traditional, but like I did psychology, then I did HCI, like human-computer interaction, and it seemed like a lot of people in UX research have a psychology background, so for me it's not like, oh, you went from this to that, like I didn't really do anything that crazy. So if someone is like, doesn't have any type of background, but is really interested in it, because there's no like formal UXR training, what advice would you look for? Or I guess you can answer that question in a way of, what do you look for in candidates when you're hiring?
Right. So I feel that at least now with having this UXRTO community, it's been really great to connect with researchers within the Toronto population.
Mm-hmm.
I find that this is a great way for anyone who wants to get into UX roles to then network and connect with individuals that may be able to meet with them and to talk to them about just potential opportunities of job shadowing or even internship opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
What I do find then when I'm interviewing candidates is because often our primary responsibility is to understand the needs and the expectations of our users, to almost have the candidate flip the script and to almost do their own jobs to be done on why am I looking to hire for this role.
Yeah.
So if they're able to establish that they could pull like the reasons why I need to hire someone, if they could understand what my needs are, if they could, if they could essentially user interview the interview.
Yeah, nice.
I think that's a really great way to show that you're someone that has like the curiosity, the capacity, as well as like not necessarily the hard skills, but the soft skills to do it and be a really great researcher.
Yeah. So you've mentioned jobs to be done a few times.
Yeah.
Can you maybe just give a quick introduction as to what that is, because maybe not everyone listening knows what that is.
So the jobs to be done concept is that typically people don't buy products, they hire them to fill a specific need. And then there's like a quote that's often used is that you don't buy a 3/4 inch drill, you buy a 3/4 inch hole. So your need is that you need a hole.
Then
therefore you're hiring, like you're hiring this drill in order to do that.
The job, yeah.
Yeah, so if you kind of reframe the way that you think about your products, and it's more about like, why are people needing to use the product or the service that I have?
Mm-hmm.
It then frames a way that you're able to understand, like, how can you meet those needs of the user?
Yeah, that's awesome. Great, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so I have another question for you. Speaking of what you look for in others and talking about research in general in this episode, when you tell people that you're a user researcher you're in user experience, what is the reaction you get and what do people think you actually do?
Yeah, so that's a really funny question because I still sometimes wonder if I'm saying the right things. I go back and forth between different titles. As an example, I feel like if I talk to someone that's not within like the design community that I'm a user researcher, they think that I'm researching people, but like, in what way? So it becomes really confusing to them. So then I would say I'm a design researcher, and then it helps articulate that, okay, so I research how designs are being used. But oftentimes, like if I do have to elaborate, it's essentially just saying that like my role is to understand and investigate the way that users experience a product, mm-hmm. understand what their pain points, what their challenges are, understand ways in which they're trying to use this product mm-hmm. so that we could inform something that's more easily and more relatable to yeah. them.
Yeah. Have you ever, off the top of your head, do you remember the, like, funniest response that you've got? Like, oh, you're a...
Off the top of my head... You know, I to this day, I don't even think my parents know what I do.
Same.
So then I almost just try not to talk about my work. So aww. I think they just think that I just, like... I think they still think I'm in marketing, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
But, like, in terms of just other, like, funny responses, mm-hmm. I... not so much. I think it's just the, like, oh, what's that? And then yeah. just having to talk yeah. about the role. And then from that point on, I do think that other... who may not be as familiar with, like, design thinking or mm-hmm. just user research feel yeah. like it's really cool
yeah,
that
sure.
we consider user inputs and things like that.
Yeah. yeah. I often get that I work in IT or I'm in tech support.
Yeah.
My dad still calls me up for every single problem that he has with his Apple products, and I'm like, you know that Apple has people that do that and help you. You can go ask them. They get paid very well, I'm sure. So, yeah, that's funny. All right, Dennis, so thank you so much for making the time to chat with me today. I hope that this conversation has been somewhat fun for you and that our listeners find it insightful. Is there anything that you want to share with the UXRTO community before we end this?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for inviting me to talk about myself. There I always go. Enjoy doing that.
Yeah, who doesn't?
For the UXRTO community, what I do really think is great is that there is this community. And so if you're on Slack, please feel free to reach out to me if you want to learn more about Ecobee, if you want to just talk to me about just ways in which you could... get into more of the type of work that I do. I'm always you're available to have coffee if you're interested in just even stopping by just to see like how our office is. That's also nice. Really awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. And if people want to get in touch with you, what is your Slack handle?
It's Dennis.
Okay. Great. Mine is also Melanie, so yeah. Very creative.
I'm not sure how many Dennises there are, but yeah. Cool.
Well, thanks again. So I hope that everybody else who's listening enjoy this episode. Again, this is the very first episode of Personas, so you set the bar really high,
wow.
Dennis. If anyone has any questions that they'd like to be asked for our next episode, also feel free to message me on Slack. As I mentioned, my name is Melanie, and that is also my Slack name. And yeah, please join our UXRTO group on Slack if you are not already a member. You can also check us out on Twitter at UXResearchTO. Thank you and take care.
Thank you.